This is the Inquisitive Minds Podcast.
Hey, thank you for tuning in to the Inquisitive Minds Podcast. I'm your host, as usual, Johnny Smith. With me today, a very special guest, very interesting person, started the Starving Dog Action Pack, written over 30 books, among many other things that we're going to discuss. Tammy girl, welcome to the program. I know I just asked your pronunciation of your full name and I immediately forgot it. Introduce yourself. Welcome.
You got it right. It's Tamara Lenan. They call me Tammy girl for those people who cannot pronounce Tamara. I really appreciate you having me on, my friend. I was excited when we ran across your podcast. We like to do unboring things.
No, I thank you very much for that. I was looking over your websites and everything of the things you've done. I've got to say, it's fascinating. You mind if I just start with your story? Because you're a mental health advocate, among many other things. And I take it that started very early on with you?
It did. My mother took her life when I was 8 years old. I grew up a teen cutter, really bad. Where I was from, psychology was considered a pseudoscience, and that my mother was weak-minded. I was Catholic, so she was in hell. And so this was a very emotional thing for her only daughter. And so I started working in suicide prevention from the age 13, whether I was just, you know, working at a call center for suicide, going over the YWCA, whatever I could do to figure out why my mom did what she did. Is what I've been doing my entire life.
Now, when I was reading a little about you, it a word touched the weak, and your religion told you that she was weak. Did that push you away from the church?
Not at first. I actually almost became a Franciscan nun after that. But so for me, I had to realize that what the church thought and what God thought were two different things. So. You know, I do have a great belief in God. I know since that, you gotta understand, since then the Catholic Church has changed that rule and said, you know what, this is a disease. God's not going to punish you for that. So at the time, that's the way it was. But currently now, that is not their policy.
Okay, and you started at 13. Yep. Now, obviously, 8 years old, that's a traumatic event. Were you raised by a single mom? Did you have other parents around?
No, so I was, my parents were married, so I ended up being raised obviously by my dad after my mom took her own life. And then my mom's best friend, who is now my stepmom, had moved in to help raise us after my mom passed away. So my grandmother and my dad and my stepmom were huge influences in my life growing up.
That's a hell of a start to life. And, you know, even so much more than all the things you've done, I just got to give you credit for not letting that destroy you. Because that's an easy thing to do.
It almost did. Like I said, I was a teen cutter. At one point I was almost 400 pounds. I drank like a fish and I was bitter towards the entire world. I was always a victim. And I truly, honestly hated being alive. So I, you know, in a different spot now. Right. But it's definitely weird.
Forgive my ignorance. And I won't stay on this too long, obviously, because that's not the topic of the show. But as a teen cutter, I don't know much about cutting. Is that like a relieving feeling, or are you trying to hurt yourself purposely?
Yeah, no, cutters aren't trying to hurt themselves purposely. They have a pressure that's built up inside. All the emotions that they're not allowed to express build up. And you don't know what to do. And so for me, when you cut yourself, you see the stuff, the blood leaving, it's almost like you see all the bad stuff inside you leave your body. So they're usually, you know, teen cutters are usually superficial cutters. They hide it, right? It's not an attention seeking thing. I wore long sleeves all the time and nobody knew I was doing it. And that's very common with cutters. And it's just to get rid of that pressure that builds up inside.
Okay. When did you write your first book?
When I was in the ninth grade. I was doing poetry really early on. I was in the second grade when I started getting published in poetry contests and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
But I wrote my very, very first book in the ninth grade. It was one of those old, you remember when you went to the grocery store and they had those, you know, romance novel books?
Yeah.
So my first one was called Wildfire Ranch, and it was that type of book, right? Which if you read now is hilarious because, you know, in the ninth grade, knowing nothing about real life and
physical stuff,
that book is definitely one I hope, you know, nobody ever finds a copy of.
I would love to get a copy of that book.
Yeah, I think I burned them all. But, and so I just been writing ever since. For me, writing was an escape from, again, those feelings. And I stopped writing for like 15 years because the stuff I would write, now it's not graphic and it's not bad, but the stuff I wrote was very powerful for somebody as young as I was. And people that get it, and other people don't. Like, people read this, my works, my poetry works, and they just go, wow, you know, or damn. And so it was just emotionally on a different level for where I was at. And so I didn't get good feedback from my school or my dad on that. So I stopped writing for about 15 years, and then I finally decided it was enough was enough.
Well, from the math, you stopped writing for 15 years, and then you got prolific.
What do you mean prolific?
You started putting pen to paper.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You started putting them out. And the most interesting thing, and I'm sure you've talked to people quite a bit about this, but it's a series for children approaching mental health topics.
One of my book lines, like I said, I got a lot of books out there. One of my book lines is specifically for mental health for children, understanding if they lose a parent to suicide or, you know, a friend, you know, and it's in age appropriate ways to explain, right? Trying to create the series of books that I needed when I was 8 years old, when nobody could explain to me what the hell was going on.
Oh, wow. That's inspiring.
And we released three more in January. Our first one is kind of a little joke one. It's called The Little Guru. It introduces the rest of them. And this January, I'm having a suicide prevention event in January in the town where my mom took her life in 1987. I have not been back to Florida since my mom took her life. I avoided it. And so for me, I'm releasing the children's book line and my book Letters to Nancy at that event in Orlando in January on her death anniversary. And we're just going to see if we can help some people.
Oh, my. I read that you were also a Navy veteran. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, thank you for your service. How did that add to your life where it is now? Because we haven't even got to the tip of the iceberg yet of all the things you've been doing. But did that give you the structure you needed, or did you leave as an escape from your location?
I left as an escape from my location. My dad made too much money for me to go to college, and there was no opportunity. I mean, this is before the internet. I had 1,200 people in my small town. I was either going to work at coal mining factory or write something else. And so for me, joining the military was a way to pay for college and get out of my small town and go see the rest of the world.
Okay. Did you serve your 4 years, 2 years, 6 years? What did you do?
Actually, you know, unfortunately, and this is a story I share, I was in only about a year because my mental health stuff reared up and I was still cutting when I was in the Navy. And so when you're wearing all whites, that kind of ruined it. And so I ended up getting a medical discharge, honorable, all that, but I wasn't getting the therapy and things that I needed. And nobody offered it, right? Because back then, mental health was, again, frowned upon by the military. You had to sneak out in town and see a civilian and then hope those records never wind up in your medical report to the military.
And then I imagine your colleagues weren't supportive for mental health as well at the time.
No, oh, absolutely not.
You know, suck it up, you know, that type of thinking.
Exactly what it is. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps and keep going.
That's incredibly, incredibly dangerous thinking. There we go. I wrote it down about religion. Can you tell us a little bit about the Starving Dog Action Pack?
Absolutely. So I formed the Starving Dog Action Pack in 2014. Very simply put, it's a group of entrepreneurs that put action where their hashtag is. So I'm hashtag mental health. I work in the mental health stuff, you know, year round when, and the cameras aren't always there, right? Mm-hmm. There are people giving back to their communities when they don't have to, and most of the time people don't know it's them doing it. Because you hear that saying, be the change you want to see.
Yes.
Mine's the exact opposite of that. We get people together who are the change that needs to happen. And
okay.
And we do that. And so the Starving Dog itself, and I'll send you the video later, is actually a story I used to tell when I was working at the YWCA. Because what you can't do is go to somebody in a toxic or suicidal relationship or something like that and tell them it's toxic and just to leave. They're not going to do it. They're going to feel judged. And so the starving dog story is about a little puppy on a farm and how, I'll do a short version of it. The farmer's beating it and everything, starving it to death, but there was no fences. The dog could have ran away anytime it wanted to. And I always wondered, because I watched this dog when I was a little girl, why the dog just didn't leave, right? And so I noticed this pattern over and over again. And one day the dog starts growling at the farmer. And I'm like, oh, this is it. He's going to attack. He's going to leave. And the farmer threw him a big juicy steak. Now the dog just grumbled that up as fast as it could. It was starving to death. And I thought, well, maybe the dog will actually leave now. Then the dog didn't leave. He went up to the owner, wanted loves, wanted pets. And then the cycle starts again. That dog was so hungry. And all of a sudden he thinks, oh, I'm getting what I need. It's going to get better. And when you're in that starvation mode, you don't create healthier relationships. And when I tell that story, people can go, oh, that's my work. That's my marriage. That's, you know what I mean? I'm the starving dog who's so starving for something in my life. I'm allowing people to treat me badly. And I don't leave the situation because I think, oh, they're doing it once. They'll do it again.
Wow. I'm impressed because I've never heard that put so succinctly in such an understandable way.
Well, thank you. I'm not very bright. So a lot of the things that I wrote.
Now that's nonsense. We're positive here. I refuse to let you talk down on yourself.
Oh, it's not down. It's just a fact. I know who I am as a person. All the things that I did, I wrote honestly, and my hashtag are all things I did for myself first. I had to understand why people didn't get out of toxic relationships, right? And so I wrote the starving dog story. I needed to stop being lazy and get shit done. And so I created Put Action Where Your Hashtag Is. And for me, when people meet me, they're going to understand that I'm never preaching on a soapbox. Everything that I, talk about and want people to become a part of, I started that for myself and myself only. And I'm just really blessed that message is resonating with other people now.
As a leader, I was always told, don't tell someone to do something that you wouldn't do yourself. And it sounds like that's exactly what you're putting into action. And yeah. I can't express more respect for that. You know what I mean? That's amazing.
Well, I appreciate that. And a good leader works beside their people, right? When I was before COVID hit, we were working event logistics, right? I know how to set up the lights. I mean, I was setting up the stages and the booths alongside everyone else as well.
We'll touch on that in a little bit with the term ghost management, but I don't want to forget about what you're doing here, the Starving Dog Action Pack. Is that also part of hashtag revolution?
Yes, it is. So the Starving Dog Action Pack, like I said, is a group of entrepreneurs, and we will actually be doing a stadium tour. And my goal is to have the largest fundraiser ever towards suicide, not awareness, because we're aware it's a problem, suicide prevention. And long-term, I want to put self-esteem support groups in all the high schools around the United States. And we also provide mental health counseling to veterans, teen cutters, and their family members if they need it. And we've been providing counseling for people since 2014.
Real quick, great time to promo. Does that have a website you could throw out there for the people or an email address they could reach out to?
All the starving dog stuff is on tammygirl.com or the starving dog Facebook page. It doesn't have a separate website.
I'm glad you brought that up, that it's suicide prevention and not suicide awareness, because I've had this debate with people, and I'm not shitting on anyone who's trying. I just want something actually to be done. And I've talked with a good friend of mine, veteran co-host on another show, Dan Brady, about veteran suicide prevention. And one of his gripes is about like the 22 a day hashtag or whatever the number is, where you do 22 pushups and you hashtag, and that's supposed to raise awareness. And what the hell is more people? We know people are dying. We know people are ending their own lives.
Yes. And I'm a veteran as well. So I have mad respect for the, veteran suicide thing. But I was a daughter before I was a veteran, and I have upset some people because I won't just claim myself as a veteran mental health speaker, because that's not what I am, right? And I agree. And that's why I created the Put Action Where Your Hashtag Is. Great. Do the 22 pushups. I hope your ass is downtown helping somebody after that. And so, yeah, I'm time for awareness is over, as far as I'm concerned. We're aware it's a problem, and it's time to get an army action and make some impact.
Okay. Now, with this, and forgive me if I'm seeming like I'm stupid here, because I may be. Put your hashtag where your mouth is. Is that what you said it was?
Put action where your hashtag is.
Put action where your hashtag is. So are you also seeking out people who are already doing stuff and then like encouraging like-minded groups together to form networks? Is that the goal here?
Absolutely. We work with all kinds of networks. What I would like to see happen for nonprofits and groups like this is people working together, right? Us just fixing mental health or sending somebody to counseling is a band-aid if they're also barely making it by and they're homeless, right? If you give a homeless person a house, they'll be homeless again in 6 months. I want people to work together and solve the entire ecosystem of issues so that we can create a healthier environment for those who need it. You know, and I've worked with groups before that wouldn't help somebody, because if we help your person, we've run out of money. So we have all these organizations with a little bit of money doing a little bit of things. And so everybody coming together going, we got housing, we got resumes, we got mental health, and making it a growth zone, an economic growth zone is what I'm trying to create, quite honestly, is a growth zone for all the things that need to happen for one person.
That's beautiful. You know what? Real quick, since we all know COVID and what's been going on, what was your take on the effect of people's mental health during the lockdowns initially? And do you have any advice on what we could have done or what we can do in the future to improve a situation like that?
So we've been social distancing since about 2010. And what I mean by that, that's when MySpace and Friendster and that stuff popped up. And so our mental health has been declining, because never in the history of the world have other people been so accessible, right? Like you and I talking right now.
Yeah.
But never in the history of the world have people been so disconnected emotionally from one another. We've become robots behind a screen. And mental health did get a lot worse during COVID, because people are home. There's no boundaries for workforce now, right? Used to be 8 to 5, go home, your boss can't bug you. Well, now bosses think because you're home, they can text you at midnight and they can demand these things, and there's no more lines. And those lines need to be drawn. We're pack animals. At the end of the day, humans need other humans. And so definitely keeping away from each other has definitely harmed the mental health situation, and it's gone up quite a bit.
You know, I love social media because it allows me to connect with people, but I do see the shortfalls of it. Like as far as pictures, I feel like people feel like they have to compete and show this great life they're living. I personally post a lot of pictures, and I take a lot of pictures at like open mics and shows, because I'm a stand-up comedian outside of this. And people always, you know, sometimes people give me shit, sometimes people wonder why. And it's like, a lot of times it's just selfies with friends. You know, one day we're all going to die. And at most funerals, you see a picture board. They're going to want, you know, it's good memories with friends. You know, I just wish we didn't feel like we had to compete with each other so much.
I agree. Now, social media has taken a step in the right direction for that. Now, I don't know if people have noticed what we started noticing last year with our clients. Facebook has removed telling you how many likes a Facebook page has and started telling you how many followers you have, and followers have to engage in your content every single week. And so they're getting rid of that competition effect, right? For the youth, and all that, which I love. They're taking that turn and realizing the issues that they're causing with people trying to compete with a photo instead of trying to compete what somebody's doing in the real world.
I often think, cause like when I was in high school, MySpace was coming around a bit. I think I was on MySpace the last 2 or 3 years of high school, but I didn't really interact with people at school. It wasn't big social like that. I didn't quite understand it. I often think now though, what kind of shit would I got myself in just because of social media? Cause when I was a kid, I was an idiot, and I know I would have posted shit that I shouldn't have. It's just, I feel bad for these kids growing up and developing. I feel like I fell on my face literally more times I can count before I ever sat behind a computer. And I feel like that's a lesson in life kids aren't getting, figuratively and literally.
Absolutely. They're not free to make mistakes without a lot of judgment, right? Like we did when we were kids, right? There's a saying from the realm we're from is, you know, all the mistakes, all the parties, none of the witnesses, right?
Yeah.
We got to be kids. We got to make mistakes. We got to be embarrassed locally. But when you take that embarrassment and that failure global, imagine how small that person making that mistake feels. Because we don't teach kids in school that failure is okay, you know? And so part of failure is making horrible, horrible choices, right? And sadly now those horrible choices are costing people their jobs in their childhood.
In sixth grade, I pissed myself in class.
Oh no.
Yeah, it was terrible then. I mean, I don't give a shit now, but right. I would imagine my life would have been absolute misery as a 12-year-old. And everybody talking about me pissing myself, or, you know, when you're a teenager, you get drunk, you throw up and all that. I don't need all that photographed. And
yep.
This was John being a jackass. I don't need arrest pictures. I don't need none of that.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree. If you back in the day, we had those 110 cameras, though. If somebody would have showed up with a camera to one of our drunken fests, they'd have been in the lake with the camera. Right. That wasn't going down. So in 2 weeks, when it comes back, mom and dad see, you know.
Well, I remember being young and getting those disposable cameras too. And it'd be like 33 photos. And I don't know, halfway through, I would just get bored of keep reeling it up. And I was like, all right. And then I got to hold on to this thing and get it processed later. It was more of a chore back then.
MC Auto Detailing is a home-based detailing company located in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania. At MC Auto, we take care of all of your detailing needs, from a basic hand wash to a complete makeover of your vehicle. Busy schedule? MC Auto is also mobile. You can get your vehicle detailed in the comfort of your own home. With a 5-star rating on Google, we treat your vehicle as if it was our own. For a free quote and more information, contact MC Auto on Facebook and Instagram at MC Auto Detailing LLC or call 724-462-4863. MC Auto Detailing. Who doesn't like a clean car?
No, it's just a wild environment, and I feel like the deck is already stacked against kids growing up.
Absolutely, I absolutely agree with that. Which is why we want self-esteem groups in these schools.
That's not something I remember being taught in school. Is like self-esteem.
It's not. It is not taught.
I remember the DARE program. I remember how they told us when we would get older, people would offer us drugs all the time.
Psh, yep.
Still waiting on that pipe dream.
Yeah. And I haven't seen any of those drugs come around the corner for me either. So I don't know.
So there's a term that you're known for that I'm going to jump into. I found it fascinating because it sounds like sleek and futuristic ghost management.
You know what? We were working with Tamara L. Hunter. She runs Chemo Buddies for Life, and she won the Next Impactor. So her message is worldwide. Started calling us Ghost Management because she said when we would come, we would work an event, right? So I did event logistics for in celebrity management. And so we go to an event with our clients, and we would set up, we'd go find people to introduce them to, right? And run around behind stage. Well, she said that she could always tell when she showed up in an event whether or not my team was part of that event long before she saw me. And that they called it ghost management, that we just had something different. You could feel us in the building and know the things that were going on were us. Because I don't like to be in the spotlight. I love to be backstage. I love supporting people who love the spotlight. And so we were dumb. That and I could sneak into any event ever. I've been sneaking into events since I was about 13. There's not a building on the planet I can't get into.
Before you elaborate, let's touch on that a little bit because that's fascinating. What was the first event you sneaked into?
So what I started doing when I was a kid was major country music artists would come to our McKean County Fair, and my friends and I wanted to see the concerts, but our parents couldn't afford tickets. So we figured out at that point we would go actually sign up to be volunteers, and we would put up chairs and be ushers and do all kinds of stuff so that we could watch the concert for free. And with that, we figured out how to get backstage. I've been on like Aaron Tippin's tour bus, like Mark Chestnut, all the big people. And so I realized at a very early age that I could go partake in things that I couldn't afford financially. And I have done that ever since.
Any sneak-ins that stand out to you as a fascinating or rather unique experience?
The Staples Center.
Okay. Oh, in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. What'd you sneak in for there?
Trent Shelton was there, and I needed to beat him. And he was somebody that was on my was on my hit list for somebody that inspired me. And I want him to speak at our stadium event. And so I brought some distractions. And I don't want to get into too much detail how we work our magic, but we network, we get in. And that we help our clients do that as well. You know, with my network, we're usually not one phone call away from getting into where we want to get into.
So with that, you were obviously sneaking in before you did the event logistics and celebrity management. Which part of that came first?
The celebrity management. So true story. And to this day, they don't know why they did it. I was speaking, a friend of mine called in San Diego. I'm not trying to be an inspirational speaker when I grow up, right? And so I don't speak a lot. Said, I had two speakers not show up. Can you please come speak at these two events today? Like I'm behind the wire. And I said, all right. So I went down. So I did my allergy trauma for business success talk. And Les Brown Jr. was in the audience and watched me speak at both events. About a month later, I get a phone call. To this day, I don't know how he got my phone number or whatever. He's like, I saw you speak. Tell me a little bit more about what you do. Now, at that point, I was doing standard operating procedures for corporations. I had grown my own answering service and everything. And so I've been teaching operations for a very long time before I started speaking. And he goes, well, we're launching a new program. Why don't you come see if you can keep up with us? And the rest is history. I went on the road with them. I didn't tell anybody. About 90 days later, I was backstage one day. Les Brown Jr. was live, and he announced me as his director of operations. And the rest is history, really. So I'm really blessed that they opened that door for me. I'm not sure what caused them to do it, but it has led to me meeting and working with some of the best minds in business.
That's fascinating. Sometimes it feels like destiny just steps in the way with random encounters and opportunities.
It does. And you show up. I mean, it's usually pretty random, the opportunities you get, right? You couldn't imagine that type of opportunity. But that's the important part of showing up, right? You got to get out there. You got to do something. If you want real change, right, they're not going to knock on your front door. Had I not spoken at those two events, I would not be sitting here talking to you today. It was not anything I would have ever thought of doing or thought I was qualified to do. I didn't, you know, who's going to wake up and go, I want to manage celebrities. I wouldn't have.
Yeah. And just me thinking about that, I don't even know how I would attempt to start.
Right. Me either. Couldn't tell you.
Like, who's the celebrity I got to manage? Like, and then what do I pitch him? You know, hey, yeah. I'm a guy.
Yeah.
I have no success like what you're looking for behind my belt, but you need me, buddy. Yeah, well, that is amazing. You know, my mother always said, and I'm sure she got this from somebody else, but 90% of success was showing up.
Oh, it's not, I would say it's probably 99.9% of it showing up.
I've gotten a lot of opportunities just for being there myself. I haven't quite got a break yet, but who knows what it, you know what I mean? It comes when it comes.
You will. You keep going. I actually did a post today that most of the people I compared myself to 2 or 3 years ago when I started in this industry, who I thought were way above me and further ahead than where I was, aren't even in the industry anymore. They quit or they weren't as credible or whatever. And it's been a long, hard road. But, you know, almost 4 years later, we're still here.
Now, celebrity management seems like a cutthroat business.
No, I don't know. I don't have to advertise a lot. All the clients I got to meet at events I snuck into or I went with, you know, Les or whatever. So I can imagine, but I don't deal with dickheads. And so I don't deal with the celebrities who are jackasses, and I don't deal with arrogant people on any level. So I guess it could be if you're working with the wrong people.
Okay, that's fair. I just think of when I think of like show business, I think of a lot of self-centered people, I guess, for lack of a better term, maybe sociopaths.
Maybe, but again, I'm not managing like Hollywood actors and crazy people, right? I'm with the inspirational speaker realm, okay. You know, so it's a little bit different.
That being said, with celebrity management, like, again, forgive my ignorance on this. Is that like booking them gigs or what does that entail?
Whatever they need done, quite honestly, we're here to leverage the resources they have. So we've done everything from, you know, planning and putting off the entire event. We've done everything from they have the event, they don't have enough people, we go get them. We get them booked on major media podcasts. I ghostwrite a lot. I have over 24,000 media contacts. So whatever they need to be successful, if we don't do that, we know somebody who does. And we're really just a bridge to profitable purpose. So it depends on the client. We do a lot of things because I don't like to be bored.
Absolutely. I think I know the answer to this one already, but what do you attribute to all your, you said you're a great networker. What do you attribute all that success to? Like successful networking?
Growing up in a town of 1,200 people where your great, 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 great grandkid could never go to the butcher again if your great, 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 great grandfather made a promise and didn't follow through. I didn't have a choice. Your handshake was your bond where I'm from. And being good to one another meant whether, you know, I don't want to drive 8 hours to the next grocery store because I did the butcher shady, right? And so I believe that's where it came from.
Okay. This is just adding to it. I was really thinking like, because when you're honest and you're yourself, you don't have to put up a front. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. I tried that whole thing where I tried to wear high heels and be somebody else. And I couldn't do my job properly. And so I realized, you know,
salutation shades, and welcome back to your one-stop shop for all things strange and unusual, Talking with Shadows, the conversation everyone has but no one wants to admit to, here with your host Vic Whaley
and Marcus D. Now come along with us as we explore the most obscure things our universe has to offer. We specialize in helping people make sense of the most bizarre phenomenon you'll ever come across. You'll get all the great topics such as UFOs, cryptids and psychic phenomenon, but also some stories that are so spectacular they scare people to believe that they're true. Now take a seat and welcome to the One Candle Society. But always remember, keep believing.
Because we'll keep listening.
Okay, so with event logistics, how does one go about, do you plan it or do you organize it? I'm sure it's a combination of both.
Combination of both. If it's not our event, if we haven't planned it and organized it, we're planning and organizing how our client is going to show up there. We set up their booth. We do research. We find out who's in town they need to meet. We find out what other events are in town that weekend and how do we leverage somebody else's event. Can we call up and have a guest appearance over there? Really, at the end of the day, we're here to, you know, leverage as much of opportunities as possible. And obviously we're not event planners now, but we have done events last minute for our clients where, you know, a venue space fell through and we need to fix that. And we do. We're kind of the team that you call with that fourth quarter Hail Mary, right?
Okay.
We can pull shit off very quickly and stealthily, part of that ghost management thing because of my network. We're not out there trying to be event coordinators, but if that's what our clients need, then, you know, that's what we do.
And a lot of these venture clients, they do, you said, speaking engagements for like mental health. And I seen though, maybe I'm incorrect, but you've done some talks on business as well, right?
I do. Yeah. So like I said, my start I started my own company in 2009 and I learned I was really good at operations and creating standard operating procedures. And I was really good at communication, with customers and calming them down and stuff like that. And so I do teach a lot of business skills as well. My biggest talk is leveraging trauma for business success, as in how you overcome certain things and use that, you know, to build a very successful, business.
Now, I read something along the lines of you're taking the successful actions from your larger clients.
I can hear you.
And spreading it to small businesses.
Yes, exactly.
And did that start during the pandemic?
It started because of the pandemic. Yeah. So when the pandemic hit, we lost every single tour client we had. It was going to get ugly. So I hired a business coach and we started looking at my assets and how can we help entrepreneurs make money during COVID so that they, you know, don't struggle. And that's what we did. We had to pivot and we started helping small, companies and entrepreneurs from there.
Now, are these like seminars or is it one-on-one?
I don't do seminars. No, a lot of one-on-one with the clients. This January will be our first event where we're basically it's going to be a workshop where they show up and they actually will leave with all their hashtags, their Google My Business. They're going to leave with everything they need for a good solid foundation for their marketing campaigns. We do a lot of work for other media companies. Like a media company will get hired and then they'll actually hire us to make them look better, right?
Okay.
But we're starting to have like events in January of our own.
Okay, now that's very interesting. It's fascinating to me how people have had to reinvent themselves to be successful during this pandemic, and that's another great example of turning on your heel, because I'm a performer as well. And when the venues got shut down, it was painful. It was rough. Have you found it easy to start booking speakers again and picking up clientele?
Yes, absolutely. We're full in. We're actually creating a speakers bureau as well. So we're super excited about that and everything's coming up. But I will tell you, I wouldn't be where I'm at. I don't know what would happen during the pandemic had I not realized I needed help and hired a business coach, right? And so bringing in that extra people, somebody else got to look at the things I had. I would have never thought to monetize my media contacts for small businesses at all until he pointed it out.
Do you mind if I ask who it was you hired?
Yes, I work with Steve D. Sims.
Okay, yeah, we spoke about Steve D. Sims recently.
Yep, he is my mentor and coach. He works with Sims Media. I work with him on the hashtags. He's the one that started calling me the hashtag queen.
okay.
And so, yeah, and that's the best thing. It was the best thing I did because coaches look at the bigger picture, right? He could see things I couldn't see because I was in the middle of, oh, shit, what do we do now, right?
Huh. Yeah. Now, did you ever do any life coaching like to that?
No.
Okay. I must have read that somewhere else. You know, I want to ask you because you touched on this for small businesses. You've obviously probably seen more than your fair share of small businesses. What would you say is the biggest pitfall that most small businesses undertake?
Growing too quickly. They can't handle a sudden spurt of growth. You have to spend money on your business long before you have the money sometimes. Like you need help before you can afford help. And so what happens is, you know, they hang on all the money and they don't want to get help. And then all of a sudden they get a big influx of business and they can't handle it and they go under. Most people think small businesses fail within the first 2 years because they don't make enough money. They fail because they can't handle the influx of business.
I would have never guessed that.
And so we encourage them. So we help these small business owners grow. We teach them operations and we automate as many things as we can while they're one person, right? And help them determine the best time to start hiring help and outsourcing and, you know, that sort of thing.
Huh. So and this is probably improper of me, but when I think of small business, I automatically think of a restaurant. Have you worked with restaurants at all?
No, we work with a lot of medical, dental. We work with car dealerships, welders. I have never worked with the restaurant industry, but we work pretty much with lawyers, with every other kind of industry out there. Plumbing and AC are the hugest ones because now I own a dispatch company that I started from the ground up. And so...
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Front Office Solutions is a dispatch company. I started it so that it has a flat monthly rate. Business owners who can't afford help could hire us and we would work not as an answering service, but as their front office, right? We would answer emails, pick up the phone, schedule.
What was the name of that again?
It's Front Office Solutions, LLC.com.
Front Office Solutions, LLC.com. There was another, I can't remember the name of it, but another business venture that I believe you started with the word solutions in it.
Front Office Solutions, yep.
Oh, there was a funny hashtag. I'm going to look it up real quick because it's driving me nuts. You're right there on my search because I was looking for you. Come on, load. There was, oh, shenanigans, something with shenanigans here.
I own Profitable Shenanigans.
Yes, that's what I was thinking about. Excuse me, because I was thinking there's a funny name for something. Profitable Shenanigans.
Yeah, so that's our media company. That's what we become Ghost Management under. That's the actual name of our company. The Struggling Dog is our a different brand, right? But we kind of all do them together. And it's funny how Profitable Shenanigans came about. So the name of the business before was Soul Responders or something dumb. And one day a friend of mine called. I was running around an event. Jeff Steinberg, who's a great inspirational speaker. He was born with no arms and everything. He's been speaking forever.
Oh my.
Called me up one day. He's like, hey, I'm gonna do a testimonial for you. I need to know your title, right? Like, what do you do? And I was busy. And I was like, I'm the CEO of Shenanigans. And I just left to go with that. And I kept going. So what I noticed after that was I was going on podcasts and people were announcing me as Tammy Girl Lanann, the founder of Profitable Shenanigans. And I was like, what the hell is going on? Right, like that's not the name of my company. What happens?
Yeah.
I went to Steve. I was like, dude, I don't know what's going on. But do I correct them on air? What do I do? But the name of my company's not Proper Shenanigans. And he looked at me. He goes, why do you care what they call it as long as they call it? Change the name. And that's what we did. We kind of sometimes your audience tells you what resonates with them. And so because we don't do unboring things, you know, and we sneak into events and all the craziness that we do, Proper Shenanigans was born.
CEO of Shenanigans, maybe the best title I've ever heard.
Well, I'm unemployable by other people. If you come to an event, I got silly string. We're all wearing masks. I got lightsabers, like Nerf guns. I refuse to have a boring day. And so we're definitely out there doing things a little bit differently.
Right on, right on. I also want to touch on, you've worked with some fascinating people. God damn it. This is where I do it again. I embarrass myself. But the first crowd-funded NASCAR team?
Lisa Kipps Brown. I work with her. And we're actually going to be doing a fundraiser together. And she actually herself did the only crowd-funded NASCAR team that drives for veteran suicide. Like, they pay for themselves. And it's the first one ever. And we're working with them to raise funds for that cause. We're actually doing a fundraiser and we're going to put, you know, some business owner's logo on the hood of the NASCAR when we do the fundraising adventure. And she's an amazing woman. She took the money from the CARES Act for her community and made an extra $2.3 million for her community. She's just an amazing person. She's in charge of the Veterans Chamber of Commerce called the Rosie Network. This woman just gets it done.
Wow, that's rather impressive. Two things almost before we get ready to start wrapping it up. The first is, this is the part of the show where I like to ask people to give the listeners a piece of advice. It doesn't have to be about business. It doesn't have to be about mental health. It doesn't have to be about anything specific. Just what piece of advice would you like to give to people?
One of my favorite sayings is, today doesn't suck. It's just behind schedule for being awesome. I think leading with gratitude is something that we don't do very often when things are going badly. And just try to look at, if you got fired from your job, well, thank God I got to drive home. You know, and really lead from that place. If you can't be grateful for the 50 cents you have or the roof over your head or things like that, the universe is never going to get you all the things you want. And so that's where I come from.
Wow. That is amazing advice. I love that since you're a speaker and passionate about this, you had that in the chamber. A lot of people shuffle up and stumble real quick. That was amazing.
Thank you.
Real quick, promo yourself, your website, everything. What else you got coming up? Any events?
Awesome. The best way to interact with me is you can actually search at I am Tammy Girl, T-A-M-I Girl. I spelled it up here. And you'll find me on all the social medias. We have a free Facebook group called the Media Growth Zone, where we actually post events looking for speakers, podcasters looking for guests. They can come in there. We give media tips and everything. My website is TamaraLanann.com. And like I said, our first event is in January, and we kick off our stadium tour to end suicide.
All right. Guys, make sure you check that out. Very fascinating human, I will say. And this is also where it's like, you know, I know it's a show I'm supposed to gear and run, but sometimes I miss things. And I want to know, is there anything you would like people to know?
It takes a village, and be very careful who's in yours. As entrepreneurs, we can't do anything alone. And so find your people and, you know, and work with them, and realize that you can't do everything by yourself. And no matter what, you know, you're gonna need somebody to open a door for you, you know, and help you go forward. And so just be mindful of the tribe that you choose.
Again, that piece blew me away.
So thank you. I appreciate that.
That was amazing. Guys, check her out. She is an amazing person. Order some books, check out a website, do something, interact, be positive at least. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I really do appreciate it.
It was an absolute pleasure. I actually look forward to working with you more in the future, because you're so fascinating. You do so much.
Thank you. I have a good network. I have a lot of great people behind me, making me look a whole lot better than I actually am. So I appreciate that. But I'm very blessed to have an amazing team of people.
Thank you so much. Thank you all for listening. If you liked what you heard, share, subscribe, leave a review, tell somebody there's a fat kid in Beaver Falls trying his best. I don't know. Say something about Inquisitive Minds. Buy a t-shirt, you know. But thank you all for listening. Until next time, everybody, peace and love. All right. Yeah. Thank you. I will have this edited up, and I will have this out on Wednesday.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that. I would love to see the link when you have it. And then Steve and Lisa are waiting to hear from you. So hopefully that'll work out well for you.
I will send them email responses tonight, actually.
Awesome. And I'll ping you. I'm coming to the East Coast October 30th. So you might be able to catch up with you somewhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you again so much. Really enjoy it.